You're listening to the Australian Hunting and Beyond podcast with Matt, where we talk about hunting, shooting, fishing, camping, and everything else that the great outdoors has to offer. Let's get into it. All right, if you've listened to the podcast at all, you would know how against 1080 poison I am. And look, as I said before, I'm not a massive fan of social media for some things, and I do really like it for others. But one of the things that came across my feed the other week, and it's a little bit older, but it came across and I was like, what the hell, was this footage of a hog deer, obviously in distress. And it was crazy. It took me back. I know a few people had shared it with me and they were really like, just what the hell is going on here? So I've been lucky enough to track down the person who did the footage, and I've got Sean with me here tonight to talk about it because, well, look, I don't even know really what to say. I was super distressed and I wasn't even there. So Sean, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Oh, I'm very good, mate. Thank you very much.
Mate, appreciate you coming on. I honestly don't know. Can you maybe just give the story of what happened in what the lead up and how you found the deer? Because, man, I really want to unpack and talk about your thoughts and feelings in the moment, but just the footage really, I don't have too many words for it other than I was just hating it, to be honest. And that's not a shot at your photography or filming. That's just, you know, the animal in distress. Like, yeah, it's hard to describe. I will put it up on the socials too.
Yeah, it's a very distressing video watching it for the first time. But going into the story, so I like to go into Wilson's Promontory, which is in Victoria, down in sort of Gippsland area, and I photograph them a lot in there because there's just an abundance of them in there if you know what you're looking for. And, you know, I've spent quite a few years in there and I've found a few of my favourite spots that I like to go into where I know they're going to be. And a few years ago, I was coming across like some trail cameras, and it was sort of like it's nearly like a tea strainer, sort of two spoons, and you squeeze them together and the spoon would like open up with like a nearly like a thick paste, but the paste would sort of ooze out of the strainer part. And I was a bit curious about it, and I sort of went about it and I sort of smelt it and whatever, and it had a really, really potent smell to it. And just straight away, I just thought it would be some sort of poison or something like that. So I'm like yourself, I'm pretty dead against poisoning. It's definitely not a nice way to go. And because I've previously found kangaroos and wallabies really sort of balled up in a very stressed out sort of shape and form, like where they've kicked up like a nearly like a bloody mound of dirt because they've just died a horrible way. They've been kicking and screaming and whatever and didn't look very nice. And oh, I'm absolutely spewing. I had a heap of photos of it too, but I lost the hard drive. It just crashed and I lost the whole lot of it, of all these animals that had died, obviously, from because they're all in, you know, probably a 1 kilometre, 2 kilometre radius of all these sort of bait stations. Because in that 2 kilometres, I'd found probably, oh, I'd have to be sort of 3 or 4 in that one area of these little bait stations with cameras. And, well, that's what I found anyway. Who knows how many there'd be. And, yeah, this one day, we sort of like to choose a bit of a rainy day or cold day because I've come across some very large wriggly sticks in there. And I've stood on quite a few big ones and very lucky to have gaiters on, thanks to Hunter's Element Venom Gaiters. And, yeah, so this one rainy day, we were sort of coming along through these sort of tall tussocks and I could see a bit of fur and a bit of movement and I thought it was a kangaroo. And I thought, I've found another one maybe, or, you know, I'll sneak up to him and bust him and make him run off or something. I come up over and I seen the antlers and I thought, oh, shit, it's a hog deer. And he wasn't moving and you could just see the whites of his eyes. I was, you know, he's sort of looking back at me and I thought, oh, he's either paralyzed or something's going on with him. And as you can see in the video, I sort of reached down and touch him and he just lets out this almighty cry. And I swear to God, if you've got kids, like, it just sounds like a little kid crying, and it's absolutely gut-wrenching. And it was a terrible moment, and he sort of kicked around a bit, and I stopped filming, and he got up and sort of took off and then sort of, you know, went arse overhead. He only gained probably 20 metres or so, and then I sort of caught up to him again and sat with him for a bit, just me and the old man trying to sort of diagnose what had happened. You know, he obviously had mobility in his legs, so he wasn't paralysed or anything. And being a wet, rainy day, like, it couldn't have been a snake bite or anything like that. So the only thing that I could sort of come down to was, yeah, poison. And you know, it sort of lived on my phone for a little bit, and it's only that something come up about poisoning, and I thought, no, I think now's the time to sort of share the video and sort of spread it out, because, yeah, poison is definitely not the right way to go.
As I said, I don't even really have the words for it, because it is an extremely distressing video. And I,
yes,
man, I know majority of hunters out there, they do love animals. And I think people get confused that because you shoot them that you don't like them. And I think quite the opposite. And I understand you go in there just to film and take photos of them, because I do the same around my, I'm in the build up suburbs of Sydney, and you can't hunt them anywhere around here, but I still love just driving and seeing deer. Like, they're just such an awesome creature. So I get where you're coming from. And to have that, what was it like in the moment? Because I couldn't believe it watching it, and I couldn't understand what you would be feeling like in the moment seeing this poor thing suffer. And that's, it's very clear that it was suffering.
Oh, we were absolutely stunned. Just, we had, you know, a thousand things running through our brains trying to diagnose what had happened, and, you know, trying to, like, as it was, it sort of would fall over on its side or whatever, and, you know, would try and, like, sort of go over its body and try and find, like, maybe a bite mark or anything like that. But the hair is just so coarse and, like, very fine. It's pretty hard to find a bite, like, we, you know, in the heat of the moment. Obviously, it wasn't a snake, but back then, you're just running through all these things in your brain, oh, snake bite, like, oh, what's happened? And then, like, he didn't have any froth around his mouth or anything like that, or so I just wasn't sure. And then when he was letting out all those cries, like, we were just like, shit, like, what is going on with this poor little bugger? Like, and because I do spend so much time with them, like, you do tend to build a bit of a bond with these animals, because I've got this good little spot. Like, I've seen them, you know, from a spike all the way up to, like, 15-inch, like, good-looking stags. And, like, I've even found, like, dead heads in there, obviously from the shootings that go on in there, because I've found them with, like, bullet holes in their necks. And then, you know, I can identify the antlers to my photos, and I think, oh, geez, like, I only photographed this poor bugger, like, a month ago, not even, like, and he's, you know, he's curled up in these tussocks, he's just died a horrible death, or, you know, he's been shot. I've found quite a few dead heads of stags that I've photographed and whatever, and, yeah, oh, it just makes you sick. It surely does make you sick.
I couldn't be a wildlife filmmaker or documentary person where, I know it's nature sometimes, but when it starts to get to the point that it's cruel, I sit there and wonder, like, how you can't intervene. Like, if you see an animal that's even bitten by a snake and it's, you know, you can see it suffering and just laying there and whatnot, I always relate it back to, yeah, I get it's nature and I get that's just how the world works, but I also get that it's a living animal, and that if you can stop the suffering, that's not a bad thing. And that's the reason I'm very big against poison. And I really think that hunters do a pretty damn good job out there of making sure they're ethical kills, and the animals, you know, suffering is absolutely minimal. Things happen, of course, that's part of life, but, you know, we don't want to try and prolong agony or suffering. And I think most hunters are pretty good with that. I just, yeah, it's when I saw it, I instantly went to poison. Now, as you said, I don't think you can be 100% sure unless you autopsied the animal. But that's where my mind went, just seeing it and watching the footage, and it just had a look about it that I felt that way. Now, I might be wrong, who knows, but it was crazy. I couldn't believe it. I'm glad you shared it, because I could understand you not wanting to share it because it is quite a confronting video. But I'm glad you did, because I think that the more footage like this that gets out, and if it is poison, which again, we are assuming, but I think it looks like it from my perspective, I think it's important that people see this is the reality behind it. That, yeah, I get poison is a cheap way to go, but there are definitely cons to doing it that way. And there are far better ways to do it. Now, that is a very diverse topic, because there's a lot of people that have very different opinions. And previous episode, it was really interesting to hear from an environmental scientist and his perspective on it and why the government looks at that. And I get that side of it too. So it's just one of those things. It's pretty full on. Is it like, and this is probably the first time you've come across something like that for deer?
Yeah, besides all the kangaroos and all that sort of stuff that I've previously found, that's the first deer that I've found still alive. And I probably would have given him maybe another day.
Yeah.
Because he was in pretty bad shape.
And you think of that, like just a day of what we witnessed in that video. Man, that's a horrible, horrible way to go.
Yeah, well, if you'd like me to play the noise for the listeners, if no one's heard it, like,
yeah.
I'm all for spreading the word on this, and if no one's seen the video, at least they'll get to listen to it if they're on the other side listening.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Like, even just the look on its face, it's just so scared.
Yeah, that's sending just chills up my spine. You can hear the pain and suffering that's going on in there, and you don't even have to watch it. It's
And like to describe, if you haven't watched the video, like even to describe it, like the deer's head is like looking away from me, but you can just see its eyes. They're just so wide open and afraid and looking at me like it just wants to run away, but just physically cannot run away. The fear in its face just, like, oh, it just makes me so sad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I could sum it up better. Sad's the word. Like, you just look at it and it's just, yeah, the poor thing. I don't understand where we even can consider poison, or, you know, seeing any animal suffer. Like, it just doesn't sit right with me. And, you know, I get that there's the argument that it's a financial reason is probably the main reason we want to use it, but it's just, yeah, I don't know. You can't say hunters are cruel and then be in support of using poison. And I know a lot of people out there that just, they do think that, and I don't get it. I have absolutely no idea. Yeah, it's insane.
That's one of the main reasons why I uploaded the video, because like I'd shown a few people, like shown a few of my mates and everything like that, and they were like you need to share this. You need to like share this with the world, because at the moment, like with all the gun laws and everything like that, and all the bad talk about hunters and everything like that, it just goes to show that hunters aren't that bad. But I think on the other end too is I don't think they want to promote hunting. They don't want to promote firearms and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've said that from the get-go. I don't actually think it's a really target on hunters' backs as opposed to the firearm thing. We're a very anti-firearm country, and I do really believe that's the biggest push for not having hunting. And then I think then there's the other angle of it. You said, you bow hunt and whatnot. I think the other angle is it's an easy one with bow hunters to say it's cruel or inhumane and try and label it that way. So you've got sort of one side that are more like the animal activist side of things, where that's their standpoint. And then you've got the anti-gun side as well. And that's, you know, it's almost like this attack on hunters from 360 degrees is what I sort of say, because there's so many different elements to it. It's not just facing one group that's against. Like, you've got your anti-gun people, your anti-hunting people, your anti, you know, welfare, and then there's a million other things in it. Then there's the commercial side of it, the unskilled and untrained side. There's all these different elements that people go that, hey, that's why we shouldn't hunt, which doesn't make sense to me, trying to look at it from a logical perspective and taking the hunter's cap off. And it's hard to do that when you're invested in something, which I'm sure you appreciate. But it's definitely, watching that footage, you cannot compare hunting. Even if you get it wrong, you can't compare the pain and suffering that animal was going through. Just insane. It's just, as I said, we'll put the footage up, I'll share it, we'll put links up and everything like that, because I think you really have to see it. Like, you can hear it and it sounds horrible, but I don't even think that touches on how bad it is to actually watch the footage.
It's definitely a video that pulls on the heartstrings, that's for sure. And if you are an animal lover, you kind of got to recommend people not to watch it, because it's quite distressing. And once you sort of see it and hear it, you can't go back.
No, not at all. I'm with you. I'm glad you shared it. I'm glad it's out there, because I think things like that need to be. It's a funny stance. Sometimes we hear, you know, you shouldn't share those sort of things or show those sort of things. But if you don't, how does everybody know what's going on? How do you have, we have all these, like, I love hog deer. And I love the hog deer ballot and I love everything down there. It's fantastic. We've got free range hog deer to hunt. Love it. Think it's done pretty damn well as well. But then seeing one of these animals going through that and then thinking that this amazing creature that is in this isolated pocket is getting potentially poisoned, killed. It's insane. I don't understand it sometimes. It's a hard pill to swallow.
Oh, bloody oath. Like, hog deer definitely do have a special little place in my heart, because I've just spent so much time with them, especially like up close. Like, some of these hog deer, you know, I've spent, you know, nearly all day with them, just roaming around with them. If they disappear, I sort of follow them along. And like, I've been like just only like meters away from them laying down. And, you know, I'd lay there with them for like 2-3 hours while they fall asleep. And I just sit there and watch them. And they definitely do hold a special place in my heart. And when he let out that little almighty cry, I just wanted to pick him up and give him a cuddle. Like, and one of the first things we sort of did was, we have a taxidermist that sort of lives close by. Like, he's probably only half an hour, 40 minutes away. And I rang him up straight away, because he has a hog deer pen. And I thought, oh, like, if there's anything wrong with him, like, he might be able to sort of get him back to health or anything like that. And, you know, I sort of demonstrated the noise that he let out, and he just turned around and he goes, no, he's done. Apparently they let out like a bit of a death cry in such a stressful situation, and something just triggers in their brain and they just go spiraling into a stressed out state. They'll stop eating, they'll stop drinking, and then they'll just wither away and die.
Yeah, it's such a shame. I get what you're saying about just spending time with them. Like, I used to spend a lot of time down in Kosciuszko National Park, and there's a couple of good camping spots down there. And they're national parks, so no hunting, obviously, and I'm definitely all about the law-abiding, ethical side of it. And I used to sit there and there'd just be 20 fallow deer. Like, you'd get within 10 metres of them, just, you know, they'd be out the back of the camper or the tent, and you'd, like, just watching them just browse. Cool. Like, it was so cool. Like, I said to my wife, because, you know, we used to go away and with a couple of mates, and just they'd give me stick going, oh, how can't you, you know, get one of these things? Look how easy. They're like 10 metres away. I was like, well, they know they're in a national park and protected, so let's not go too crazy. But it was awesome just seeing them and watching them and getting so close to them and them just going about their business. I wouldn't want to shoot one, because it wasn't a challenge. Like, it would have been just, I don't consider that really hunting. And I've never sort of understood that other side of it, of people that poach and things like that. So, yeah, it was interesting when you started to talk about that, because I get where you're coming from. It's just, they're awesome to watch. And it's one of those things I've spoken to mates going, hey, they've got some good properties. I was like, oh, I don't need to hunt. I'm happy just to come and watch. Like I've said it before, like the red deer roars coming up. I really want to hear a roar. I don't need to hunt them. I'm happy if just to hear the damn things and be in the presence of it. So that's something that I'd be really keen on. And it's hard to explain. It's hard to say, hey, these animals are such a cool thing, is that you don't necessarily need to pull the trigger. I know I was out with a mate and we were just watching nine of them. They're over the wrong side of the fence on a property he took us to. And that's cool. we just sat there and watched them. And, you know, it was just like, it's cool just to see them just in their natural environment. But I'm very much big like that with all different animals too. Like I see reptiles. I love watching snakes or goannas and things like that. So it's the same sort of deal for me.
Complete same with me, mate.
So your background, you are obviously a bow hunter, but you're into the photography side of as well. Where does that sort of, you know, which one do you prefer? Which one do you like? Because they're opposite sides of the spectrum, I suppose. Like you're shooting one with a camera and you're shooting one with a bow. Which one do you prefer and sort of why?
Well, I've only sort of picked up the bow in the last couple of years. I've always hunted with a rifle. My old man got me, you know, they all, were heavy into the clay target shooting, and then they sort of picked up into the rifle and started hunting Samba and all that. Like we're very Samba dominant hunting family sort of thing. Like, yeah, we love chasing them big fellas around the mountains. And then we started, I can't even remember, because I used to skateboard and everything like that when I was a kid, so I sort of always had a camera in my hand because I wasn't the greatest skater, but I could take an all right photo and sort of film a bit. So I always had a camera in my hand, and then one of the local shops, like the photography shops, you know, had this great big lens in there. And I thought, fuck, that's pretty cool. And took the tax return in there and bought that, and then, you know, just photographed birds and everything in the backyard. And then I can't even remember why, but, yeah, the old man took me into the prom, and we sort of come up into this clearing, and there was this beautiful stag out in the middle, and then that just lit that spark. And like, yeah, that would have been 15-20 years ago now, maybe, and I've been going in there ever since. And I definitely don't have a lot to show for it, because yeah, hog deer aren't the easiest animals to find. But the hunting side of it, it's definitely a fine line, because especially when COVID and everything come along, like, you know, you go into the supermarkets and there's no meat on the shelves, and, you know, you're hunting this beautiful animal that can provide a lot of meat for you, but then, you know, you want to take a beautiful photo at the same time, you're like, what do you do? But, like, I do take the camera out a lot, and especially after upgrading all my own gear, like I went from a Nikon DSLR to just complete Sony mirrorless gear now, and I've spent a lot of money on that sort of stuff in the last couple of years now. So, you know, the guns are sort of locked up and they've been in there for a little while, but now I've got the bow, so I'm sort of putting that little bit of photography knowledge into the bow hunting, because, you know, with a bow you're only sort of getting to sort of 40 metres, 20 metres in sort of thing, and that's what I'd get to within the sort of photography as well. But it's like they know as soon as you've got a bow in your hand, they're gone. They're nowhere to be found. And to pick up on what you were saying, like we drive every bit of 4 hours sort of up to La Cola and Dargo and stuff. And if we're driving in the morning and see a deer on the road, you know, we'd pull up, turn the high beams on or whatever, and just sit and watch until it runs off. And like, I'd just say to my old man or my friends or whatever, like, I could easily just turn around and go home. Like, that was satisfying enough just to see a doe and a young'un standing on the side of the road. Like, the photography side of me has sort of really brought out like the beauty in the animal, but then the hunting side of it's like, you know, provide for your family. It's such a beautiful, reference of meat, and you know where it's coming from, and there's no bad stuff getting mixed in with it. You know where it's, you know what it's been eaten, everything like that. Like, it's just a beautiful resource, but yeah, it's a hard one to choose, you know, the bow or the camera.
Yeah, I get it. I've talked about it many times about just, I have so much respect for those animals that I hate the idea of just trying to wipe them off the landscape. I hate the idea of them just getting shot and left to rot. I hate the idea of poisoning. And I just think it's such a waste. And it's, I don't know, the word disrespectful comes to mind, because I just think they're too good for that. And, you know, I'm not the most successful hunter, that's for sure. I'm pretty ordinary, to tell you the truth. But it doesn't bother me, because if I can get out there and see deer, similar to what you just said, if you saw one, I could go home. Like, you know, it's never, I don't leave my trips going, oh, bloody hell, I didn't get to shoot one. If I've got to see deer, I'm super happy, even for that flighting second, is that, oh, you know, geez, brilliant. How did it get me? And it's gone. Like, that's just, it's more like impressed moment than anything else. And
yeah, for sure.
I don't know. I really struggle with the whole just shoot them in a chopper, like what's going on in South Australia, and just let them rot. It just doesn't sit right with me. And I think there's so many better ways we could utilize the meat. And if we are going to take their life, use it in a decent way, not just, you know, like they're some second class sort of animal. And that's what it really feels like sometimes.
Yeah. I've always sort of said that, like, with the shootings and everything that they, like the culling programs and everything that they do in Wilson's Prom, like the amount of revenue that they would be able to produce if they did, say, a ballot in there for 2 weeks or even just a week. Like, if you put out, you know, a $50 ballot, I know so many people that would pay that just to go hunt in the prom. And then that way, that deer is getting brought out. If you brought out, say, a permit for that whole deer to get brought out, and then obviously you weigh it and everything like that, and that whole deer is getting salvaged. Like, it's going to go straight into a family's mouths, like, not just left to rot. Like, I've found, I wouldn't even know how many I've found that have just been out there rotting with a nice big bullet hole in its neck, or, you know, or it's been shot and it's run out into like a dam or something like that, and they've just looked at it and just gone, oh, well, I'm not getting that. And then when that dam dries up, I come in there and then it's just sitting there absolutely rotted out. Well, it's just such a waste. Like, like all the poisoning and everything like that, they always say that, you know, the hog deer are putting the biggest threat on the environment in there. But, you know, you drive along the main road into the prom, it's very windy. The scrub's sort of only sort of 5 meters off the bush. The whole drive in, you're just seeing wallabies and kangaroos dead on the side of the road. I might have found maybe one or two ever hog deer dead on the side of the road.
It's interesting. There's so much conflicting research coming out too on introduced species, and that they don't actually impact as much as we first thought. And
I don't think
we actually have enough research. And I know when I was talking before with Eric and saying scientists like data and there's never enough, I appreciate that, because, you know, the reality is that's true. And I appreciate that these studies cost money and who funds them, that there's not enough out there doing this. And it's really interesting, because there's so many papers that you read and they just go, no, that doesn't really link up to that these animals do as much damage as what we originally thought they were doing. I don't think it's as cut and dry as a lot of people make out, that the damage that they do to the landscape. I appreciate they've got hard hooves and whatnot, but I read somewhere the other day, and it was a really good comparison, saying if we were that worried about the environment, we wouldn't have cows and sheep running around the paddocks, because
100%.
Are they good for the environment because we're farming them? Like, one argument doesn't link to the other argument when they're on different sides of the spectrum.
Well, you just got to look at like those, like the sides of the real steep hills that the cattle are on. They put those like steps into it because they can't walk straight up it. And then you got to look at like, say, the size of a hog deer foot. It's got the like the span of like a 50-cent coin compared to a kangaroo's foot that's like half a meter long. They got these great big claws on them. Like you can't comparison that a foot, the diameter of a 50 to 20 cent coin is going to put so much, you know, effect into the environment.
The other one I've always sort of pondered on was at some stage, I wonder if every animal was native to the landscape, because we've had a lot of different animals over a long period of time. We're still learning on, I don't know if you follow the Boneyard up in Alaska on Instagram.
I love that page.
Oh, man, that's cool. But that one there, just it really just gets me thinking and questioning like how much people know. You know, he finds that many species up there where the scientists have come out and said, no, they didn't exist in that area. Well, they're there. Like, that's like, you can see it. And you then got to wonder, you know, we were connected, you know, before this continent was just Australia. We were connected to a lot of other places with a lot of movement. I don't know. It just makes me think, were there animals here? You look at some of the cave paintings, the paintings of Indigenous people, and there's animals there that look like deer, and there's other things there that you sort of sit there and go, I wonder if we did have something similar on the landscape that is no longer here, much like a lot of species before us that are no longer here, the megafauna being a major one. It does make me sort of question and wonder and then go, you know, are they that bad to have on the landscape for that? Or are we making a mountain out of a molehill because we've got this idea of conservation that the bush has to be completely native? But then there's some contradicting arguments even just on our native plants and trees that up here, I live near a place called Heathcote, which is supposed to be the closest the bush was pre-settlement. There's information that sort of goes some of the other bush isn't the same and it's a little bit different. So I find that stuff fascinating. I'd love to have a time machine and just go back and see what it was like in different spots and what was around.
Oh, wouldn't
and you? Just,
I'd love it.
Oh, it is. It's something that you just I love thinking about.
I wouldn't come back here, that's for sure.
Oh, not at the moment.
I wouldn't come back to this day.
No, I think I sometimes say that. I think I was born in the wrong era that I would love to have seen how people did things pre sort of colonization here. Like I think of the landscape and I think how the hell the knowledge of the land and being able to be at one with it and survive for so long, far out, it's impressive. So impressive.
I've always thought like, you know, during school and everything like that, getting taught Chinese or Indonesian, like I think that's one of the stupid things we've ever brought in. You know, why not bring an Aboriginal class in and have some natives or like, you know, some Aboriginal people come in and teach kids how to cook or, you know, teach kids out in the bush, you know, what not to eat, what to eat, you know, how to start a fire, how to do this, like maybe not the fire thing, maybe save that for, you know, like a higher level in schooling or anything like that. But, like teach the kids about where, like what was here before us.
It's crazy. My background is Aboriginal and I sit there and I'd love to be able to speak the language. I can't. I'm definitely not bilingual, that's for sure. And I sit there and just think at one stage, the amount of different languages that we had in this country from the different mobs compared to now, we've lost so much. And it's a bit of a travesty when you think about it because other countries revere the culture and sometimes we have missed an opportunity, I feel. And I like what you're saying. I agree that having learnt the old ways and modernising it so that you've got both what we currently live like and also having that knowledge of what previous people lived like here too, I think that's a real loss. But all of it, I think people not knowing how to do things is a massive loss. I would love, I sort of reflect on it. I would have loved in school to have learnt how to butcher or like skills that are relevant or that even agriculture. I know some schools do it, but my school didn't. And I sort of reflect and go, I learnt Shakespeare, which was so pointless. And the amount of time I spent on it, yes, it was a little interesting in parts, but I sort of sit there and go, geez, it would have been nice to have learnt about a lot of other things too. And especially from, I think, life skills and bushcraft. And I'm a massive bushcraft fan and I dabble in it, but definitely not that good. I think that's my motto in life is just, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. And but it's so much fun and just thinking about it and then just, you know, watching shows like Alone and being so bloody impressed that what they make and some of these deadfall traps and things like that. It's so bloody cool. It's hard to imagine how people survive, but props to them, even, you know, crossing the country and, oh, man, just it's so cool to think about and just, oh, I'm always impressed when I start thinking about the hardships they must have gone through.
Yeah. I'm sure you know about that YouTube channel, Scotty Gone Walkabout.
It's good. I thoroughly like his.
Yeah, his skills and then his quality of content. I love watching that guy's videos. Like having that photography filmmaking background, I can literally sit back and just enjoy every second of his videos. Like I'll watch like hunting shows or something like that, and like the minute that microphone baffles or if he's whispering and you can't hear him, like I'm just like, ah, like I can't enjoy this. Like, but his quality of content, he'll just find a tree and he'll teach you about the tree, and like, you know, the Aboriginals used to use these trees to like for shade during these months, or you know, they'd use it for water or something during this time period of time through the year, or like his wealth of knowledge is just astronomical. He's definitely a good guy to watch for bushcraft and just to learn skills. Like he'll just take a backpack out with a flint and just live off the land for a day or, you know, for a night, and he does it so easy.
I loved one of them. I think he was in the Shoalhaven River just finding camp spots in the middle of nowhere, and it was just freaking awesome. I was just sitting there just going, how cool is that? And I think that's, I don't know about you, but for me, one of the allures to hunting is going to places that are off the beaten track that people don't get to see potentially. And it's that mystery that I might be the first person here, I might not be, but I'll never know. And it's such a just finding cool stuff in the bush or finding new areas and finding sign and just exploring. I'm an explorer. I've traveled pretty much most of Australia except for Tassie. But that stuff is just so cool. Seeing new places, seeing different spots, different wildlife. That is something that really is up there for me, and I thoroughly enjoy that. So yeah, no, his channel's great. Like it's one of the ones I thoroughly enjoy watching. I think he's awesome in what he does, and as you said, a wealth of knowledge. And I love watching blokes that have that sort of niche, and that you're right, his quality is fantastic. I love seeing it, the photography and videography, and as said, the audio as well. I think that sets aside people that do it really well. Like when you can watch it and just go, this, it feels like it's a well-produced product. And he definitely does that, that's for sure.
Yeah, having that sort of background too, like people are all good and well sitting on their couch watching the content, but they do not see the work and the effort that goes into making one of them videos. You know, he's spent a good, you know, 72 hours out in the bush just lugging these cameras around and batteries and microphones, plus food, water, cooking, camping gear, like, and then he's got to carry all that back and then sit in front of the computer for hours on end, like, you know, just to get one shot of him walking up a mountain, and, you know, it's a nice wide shot and he's ages away. He's got to still run back and grab that camera and then continue back up. Like, you know, he might walk 20 meters and then have to run back 20 meters. So that's put him back. You know, it might take him 6 hours to get to a camp spot, lugging all that gear in. it's the amount of work that goes into those videos. I've done it a couple of times now and it's not bloody easy.
So, well, let's talk about that because I'm a fiend for packing way too much. I'd rather have more than not enough. I'd rather do the hard yards with a bit more weight than leave things behind. But I cannot imagine what you guys do with the weight of cameras and multiples and, you know, having everything on you. How hard is that to do? And then from the other side of it, like talking like you just said, because, yeah, you don't – I'm starting to think about it now. I never really did. I never sort of sat there and went, oh, this is filming him walking up and past it. But he had to have got up there and put the camera there in the first place. I never even thought about that. Now, you know, doing the podcast and starting to probably think more about that sort of stuff, it gets more impressive because I sit there and go, man, you're probably covering areas 2, 3, 4 times to get that footage. That's a lot of extra calories and walking and things like that. And I don't know what I feel like after a full day walking around. Like it's, you know, a hard slog, especially, you know, I like to hunt down the snowy mountains and I love Manus State Forest, but man, it is some serious steep terrain there. And I know at the end of the day, I'm buggered. I can't imagine doing extras to set the camera up, come back up in front of it, all that sort of stuff. How much harder is it? How much does it impact your hunting as well? Do you tend to find you don't hunt with the camera as much or you still do?
It definitely impacts it because while you're walking along, you're trying to look for deer, but you're also trying to look for that shot, that angle, and then you're setting the camera up. Like the amount of deer I've busted setting the camera up, like, you know, you'd be sitting there mucking around with the camera and then you turn around and there's a sammy deer looking straight at you. As soon as you make eye contact, you know, they honk and run off and you think, oh well, I'll get the shot. You know, like on the last hunt that I did a solo mission into the high country. I hiked in probably 12, 13 Ks maybe, and I took way too much stuff. You know, I took jet boil and food and water and I took two cameras. I took the one that I'm using now and I took another one that's actually just my wildlife setup. You know, it's a massive camera, like lens, let alone the camera. Like that's it there.
Oh, Jesus.
It's massive and it weighs a couple of kilos.
That's just the lens, isn't it?
That's just the lens and then the camera as well and then the batteries. But like the backpack, you know, that lens takes up the majority of the backpack that I carry. So then you got to squeeze all your stuff into it. So you don't really have much room to carry anything extra. So you got to be quite reserved with what you do carry in or what you, and then you got to think of like, you know, what you want, what you might need to carry out as well. And I just got so wrapped up on being on my own. Like I went up midweek too, so there was no one up there. So I was a bit more like cautious on myself and I sort of got more wrapped up in just myself walking, trying to get to where I needed to get to, sort of more on the hunt side as well. And I didn't get any footage. I got one shot of me sort of walking in and I'd already thought about this shot, sort of walking in, you know, in the morning or the ground's all snowy and then sort of walking back like sort of at night time or late arvo sort of thing. And I walked all the way in and it paid off. I got onto this face where I usually hunt and I'd got there for probably about 8 o'clock in the morning, probably 4 hour hike in. And there was probably 5 Samba stags on this one face.
Yeah, wow.
All sort of ranging from probably sort of 16 inch real young to I saw one, he would have been probably 27, 28 velvet. And I ended up having a shot at him, but I missed him. Well, all the data on my phone was wrong for my scope. So I shot straight over the top of him and he ran off and whatever. And I waited probably about half an hour and I saw another one and I decided to make a stalk on that one. And as it was, I was stalking in, you know, with a thumping big heavy backpack and I was sort of looking, bumped into people in there before, so I'm sort of looking for somewhere to ditch my gear because where I'm going is, you know, it's steep as. I don't want to take a fall on my own. And sort of walking along, and I found this tree, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll ditch my backpack behind here because, you know, I've got probably close to 10 grand's worth of gear in just in my backpack and camera gear. And trying to find a safe spot. And as it was, I took a step over this tree and I look up and here's this, you know, 28-inch stag looking straight down at me. And like I popped him, and my rifle's a 338 Win Mag. You know, I've got this great big backpack on me pack and then this gun that kicks like a mule. And
on a steep hill.
I only had time to put one earplug in. And as I pulled the trigger, I just blew my left ear out. I just blacked out from the noise. And I look up and here he is, like, running straight at me with, you know, oh, shit. Barreled it, you know, put another one in him, and he sort of tumbled right at my feet. Like, you know, just, I don't know how much they weigh, like 200-300 kilo animal just barreled up at my feet. And then I just thought to myself, like, shit, I've got to try and get this fella out. Like, I've got to get something out, you know. So I tried to cape him out, and as it was, the time was getting on. And up La Cola, it can change pretty quick too, like the fog and the low cloud and everything. So, you know, time was the essence. So, you know, back straps, eye fillets. I started taking the back legs off, and I put the back straps in my bag, and I thought, fuck, like, I'm not going to get all this out because of all my gear. I'm not going to leave a camera there for a piece of meat, like. And walking out, man, like, that was an absolute slog. Like the backpack alone would have been probably 15 kilos worth of gear, like, and then with her head and meat in it would have bumped it up to probably 25, 30 kilos, with, and then my rifle. And, walking out, that stag nearly killed me, eh? Like, that weighed a lot. It was definitely, like, that's probably the heaviest pack I've ever packed out.
Mate, you must have a pretty good missus, because mine gets into me about the amount of money I spend on hunting gear, and then you've got the camera gear on top. That's just...
Yeah, she doesn't like it, but, you know, she just looks at it as... You know, it's like buying a bike. You go out and buy an expensive bike, you ride it two or three times, and you know, you don't ride it again. Like, we'll just go out for a walk, you know, take the dog for a walk or whatever. Like, that camera's in my hand.
Yeah.
I'll take my camera everywhere, you know, and I do it as a sort of side hustle as well, like social media content as well. So it does tend to pay for itself.
Oh, nice.
But I crashed my drone the other week, and I did a bit of substantial damage to it, and yeah, I just went and bought another one. So yeah, I'm not in the good books at the moment, money wise anyway, because that was like just over $4,000.
I just got the new Ticker Aspire. I got it and spent sort of what I'd a bit more than what I sold my previous 308 for, and got it, and then went, oh, so I now need to get a scope and some rings. So I'm in the same position at the moment. So I know the feeling. It's like,
yeah, the gun's the easy part. It's the scope and the rings that kill you.
Yeah, I was talking, we're recording this on the night that the one dropped with Josh from Modern Hunter, and I was talking about his Maven scopes, and geez, they look good. Trying to work out.
They look really good.
They do, and I'm trying to work out how... what I can spend at the moment. It's always, oh man, tax time. It's not tax time yet. And I'm like, damn it. I need
just,
this for
just
this
wait
rut.
A little bit longer.
Oh, well, it's like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the rut. Yeah.
It's like, do I really want to go out a few times chasing fallow and as I said, try and get out and hear some reds as well. Had I'm sitting there going, do I just sort of bide my time, try and pilfer one of the other scopes off one of the other rifles to just chuck on that for the moment, and then, you know, wait for the tax return come in July, and then I'll grab a decent scope on it. It's sort of the real tricky one, because I wasn't a big fan of the last gun, and I just went, nah, that's got to go. I want the Ticker. I love it. You know, it's the second one I've added. I rate them. I think they're great. And
they are a great firearm, definitely.
Oh, well, look, compared to the last one, it wasn't anywhere near as smooth. Like, it's just, I don't know, I find them very nice.
Yeah.
And not everyone agrees, and that's cool. Everyone, you know, has their own opinions, and I'm all for that. And I just really like it. But it got to the point I was just like, nah, I don't want to hunt with this other rifle. I really want to get the ticker. And the Aspire is just so good with the over. I didn't know if I was going to like the oversized bolt handle, but now I'm just sold on it. Just so good.
Yeah.
So yeah, now I'm sitting there going, I need to sort this scope out. I've got a long range setup. I'm thinking, do I just pull off the scope on that? Do I really need to be shooting paper at this time of year? I probably don't. So I'm thinking I might do that and then save up and try and look at getting a decent Maven on it there or something like that. But we'll wait and see how we go. I'm sort of then going, oh, do I just grab another scope and throw it on for the time being just to get me out of trouble for this rut, and then can always sell it or just keep it.
For sure.
It's hard to, it's a really tricky one. That's the thing I struggle with the most. I love tech and I love gear. And then I'm also on the other thing. Do I look at that Hick Micro Alpex? It's not much more weight. It films. It's day, night. It's in a tube. So it looks schmick. So
yeah.
I'm sitting there going, oh, that'd be cool. That shooting anything you just records. That's pretty cool compared to a normal scope. So, yeah, I don't know. There's so many – spoilt for choice. First world problems, isn't it? Like just so many choices.
It'd be a lot easier than doing what I do and lug a camera around and try and get a kill shot with that bloody thing, because that's, you know, it's an extra 5-6 kilos in your backpack, let alone, you know, it's sitting right there on top of the gun.
How do you go about that, like setting up for the shots? Are you – stalking in, finding the animal, then trying to sneak out, set the camera up, then sneak back into position? Is that how you sort of go about it, or?
I wouldn't know yet because I haven't got one.
Nah. Hey, nothing wrong with that.
It's so hard. It's the amount of deer, like the amount of hours I've spent trying to get into animals and then set the camera up and, you know, bump the tripod or do something, you know, you look back and there's the deer just looking straight at you, and you go, you know, you go to grab the bow or the rifle and it just takes off. And you, it's very gut-wrenching, but then you're just like, oh, well, you know, I got within 30 meters of a deer. I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah, bloody hell. Well, mate, I've only knocked off one deer, so I'm sitting here. Anyone that is even attempting that stuff, I've props to, because I sit there and go, I struggle to get into them without any of that stuff, just the rifle.
Yeah. I went and bought a long range setup, and yeah, I've hardly used it. I think I've only shot one or two deer with it, and they've sort of been within. I shot a fallow not last year, the year before, just before the rut. I got in just before it, and that was me first. That was me first fallow stag. I've never had access to property or anything like that. That's why I've always hunted Samba. And, I was lucky enough to get that on video because I had a couple of mates with me that could sit there and watch the camera as I sort of, you know, run down to the closest tree and set up. And I was able to get that on video. But, yeah, that was – the camera would have been set up at probably 400 meters, and I think I pulled off maybe a 200-meter shot. So it's easy to get stuff like that, especially in fallow country. It's all just open and easy going.
Well, I was going to say that. I think different species do lend themselves to the camera better than others, and I do want to get down there into Vic and chase some Samba because the country looks freaking amazing, but it looks so damn difficult. And I know we're getting some good numbers of Samba up here in New South Wales too now, so they're on the list. And, mate, I got a massive buzz because I just got a couple of my trail cameras that I had out in one of the state forests. So I was
– Oh, that's cool.
Oh, man, jumping up and down going, hey, you know what, it's a step in the right direction just to see they're in the area that I'm thought that they might be sneaking around, and then catching a couple out on the trail camera. That was bloody cool. So I haven't had the pleasure yet of getting to see one or getting honked, but I'm super keen to have that experience as well. So hopefully next couple of trips I might be able to be in the – I'm in – decent territory for it and chasing fallow, but you never know what you're going to bump into. So I'll keep my eyes peeled and get out there.
Yeah, fingers crossed, man, because there's nothing like putting a Samba on the ground. They are such an impressive animal. I love them to death.
How many have you knocked off?
Oh, bugger all compared to some people, like maybe 5 or 6 now, maybe.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I've spoken to quite a few different people, and that's what I love about the podcast, just meeting new people and just having a chat. And there's a few that I've spoken to that have gone years and not been able to, you know, track them. And other people, super impressive. I know Troy from Honker Hunters, he's been going pretty bloody good. He's only been chasing them for 12, 18 months, and I think he's up around the 10 mark now, or maybe even more. So
yeah, wow.
It's really interesting when people either figure them out. I had one bloke I'm talking to, and he'll be on the podcast soon, but I know he was saying he struggles with fallow and gets a heap more sandbar. He's just sort of figured them out, but he's battling with the other side of it, which is interesting because everyone I talk about how hard sandbar are and how much, you know, how switched on they are, and just, you know, they're a real tricky animal to hunt. So that's mate, I think any is a massive prop.
Yeah, sandbar are like hog deer. You just gotta. The only way you're going to get them is just spending the time out there. You've really got to spend the time because, like, you know, the more you're in it, the more success you're going to get. You're not going to shoot them from the couch.
Yeah, 100%.
So, like, you know, it's very hard for us too because, you know, we're sort of 4.5 hours to the Vic High Country. Like, it's a fucking slog to get up there.
Yeah.
And then you got to hike in or, you know, do whatever you want to do. But then, like, fallow deer, like, we're probably, you know, half hour, 40 minutes from fallow country, but yeah, I just don't have any properties I can go hunting on. Like, it's all private property.
Mate, I feel your pain. I laugh about it here is that I'm surrounded, like, literally, they're within a couple of hundred metres of me, but I have the same deal. So I end up going down the Snowies, which is generally around 4.5 hours to the forest I like to get to. And it's, you know, the wife loves to give me crap because we see them as we're driving home, especially as it gets a bit darker. And she's like, you travel 4.5 hours and they're around the corner. And I was like, yeah, I know, but not allowed to shoot them and don't have any access. That's part of it. So it's, I do like getting away though. That's one of the things.
Yeah, that's the best part.
Getting away camping, and I don't think I'd love to have a private access just to get meat and then have that off and then go hunting and really just exploring and checking out good places. That would be just a perfect mix.
Yeah. I'd just love a private property I could go onto that doesn't get shot and just take the camera out there because, you know, it's so hard to get onto areas where, you know, the animals are just cruisy. You know, some of the spots where we go, you know, as soon as they sort of hear a noise, phew, gone, like they just do not risk it at all.
It's funny. I was chatting to a couple of farmers and, you know, I was on the phone at one and he was saying he's looking out the back of his property going, oh, yeah, there's about 9 just in the front paddock. And it's like, it's crazy to hear the differences sometimes. And my first deer came off a private block that a mate took us to that he had access to and meant we're there for 10 minutes and it was just like, man, like such a different kettle of fish compared to State Forest. I've never, you know, sort of been able to do it that easy. And it was sort of all, you know, it took us longer to, you know, get food from Hungry Jack's on the way home. So it was just like what totally different. But it's one of those things I will keep persisting trying to get the private access, but it is something that I do feel is probably getting harder and harder. I think it will continue to get harder and harder somehow. I think it's going to be, you know, I understand why people have it and they cherish it because it's, you know, I think it's going to get harder and harder as we keep moving into the future too. And yeah, it's an interesting one. I see both sides. I could understand farmers having bad experiences. It happens a lot down in Vic. I've met a couple of farmers who some of the stories, I just sit there and go, Jesus Christ, like people doing the wrong thing are burning it for everybody here. And I can understand why they wouldn't want anyone on their property after the shit they're going through. So like it's insane. Sometimes you sit there and go, I suppose it's like anything we've, you know, I touched on the other day up here, we've just had groper banned for fishing. And it was because a couple of dickheads spearfished, which you can't even do up here, and they shot a couple and, you know, it made the news and now it's been banned for everyone. It's just like, man, sometimes it only takes one or two idiots to really smash everyone.
Yeah, we tend to see a lot of that stuff down here too. Like there's a little town that you drive through sort of from my end. It's a good couple hours drive. And you drive over a bridge that sort of goes over a dry riverbed and the old man took took my mum up there to like cut wood and whatever, and they were coming back through there, and they got lunch at the bakery and thought they'll just go down onto the dry riverbed. And he said there would have been 20 or 30 sort of deer legs just cut up and left down there. You know, if a greenie or even just a copper or someone had seen that, like, that's nearly bannable to, you know, that's, he reckons they were just piled up.
Yeah, I still just don't understand why. I suppose people, the only thing I can put it down to is people just don't care about others. And
no,
if they're breaking the law anyway, they don't care about laws. So they don't care about others being impacted that follow the laws, aren't they? So that's what I sort of put it down to. And it's disappointing, but I mean, I suppose it's like that in every, I guess, you know, hobby, industry, whatever you think. There's people that do the right thing and people do the wrong thing. And unfortunately, I think because we have firearms, the people that do the wrong thing, it just gets amplified, and they don't look for the people. The vast majority of the people that do the right thing are just left behind in the wind. And it's just the wrong thing gets publicized and pushed and used against us, which is I don't think that will ever change. So I think for, you know, the majority of hunters, and I call for it all the time, just do the right thing. Be out there, be positive, do the right thing, spread a good positive message, and hopefully enough people will see that and give people goes and whatnot, and that's a win for everybody.
Yeah, well, if you were actually to sit back and look at it, it's quite easy to do the good thing, and it's a lot harder to go against it. That's for sure. Like, you know, if you're breaking the law, you're sitting there thinking like, shit, am I going to get caught? Is this going to happen? Is that going to happen? But if you're doing the right thing, you've got nothing to worry about. So it's a lot easier to do the right thing, and it's so much harder to do the wrong thing. So just do the right thing. It's so much easier. I don't get it.
I'm the same. I don't get it because I know I can go to bed every night and I sleep like a baby because I'm not worried that people are going to find out that I did the wrong thing or that, you know, like it's, I don't get it.
You're not going to have the coppers banging on your door or something.
Well, like, you know, that's the thing, I sort of wonder with all the poachers and whatnot that they just obviously don't care about their firearms license or whatnot. And I sit there and just go, man, it's not a cheap hobby to be involved in. I couldn't even imagine doing the wrong thing to lose all what I have, or even just lose my license so that I can't do what I thoroughly enjoy. Like, that doesn't, it's another one that I've never understood. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I sometimes think I'd love to find out why, but I don't think I'll ever give anyone that poaches airtime, you know, so
it's crazy the amount of stuff that people go through just to, you know, just to get a deer head or something like that. Like, I remember it was a long time ago driving up to Dargo, and you sort of come into this pinch point of this property, and the house is just like probably, I don't know, 50, 60 meters away sort of thing from this corner. And right on the corner inside this person's boundary was a dead deer just with the head cut off. So they've obviously just seen it under the lights, just obviously had the gun obviously ready or not far away, and they've just shot the deer, cut the head off, jumped in the car and gone. And that person lives just there. Could you imagine waking up to that?
Again,
it'd be terrifying.
Oh, 100%. It's again why, like, I just sit there and I couldn't think of anything worse. Like, there's nothing worse when someone's been on your property, or you talk to people that have ever been robbed, and that feeling that someone else was in their house uninvited. Luckily enough, I think I've only ever had one house robbed, and it was when I was pretty young. I sit there and just go, man, imagine having a property in the middle of nowhere and you got people shooting next to your house. Like, it just takes one wrong thing to go, you know, one stray bullet, you know, and shit can get real very, very quickly. Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah, well, for instance, there was an afternoon, a friend of mine asked me if I wanted to go sit on this property that he has, and it's a very steep property, you know, like sort of straight off the road, it just drops right down into a gully. And I used to just go and just watch the deer. Like, I just have my camera and my binos or whatever. And you literally just drop off from the car. You're probably, I don't know, 20, 30 meters from the road. But like, from the road, you wouldn't even know we were there. And we were just sitting there of an afternoon, and sort of just as dusk was coming along, you could hear this, pretty sure it was a Land Cruiser by the sound of it. you could hear him coming up and you could hear him slowing down, and then all of a sudden, like, the property in front of us just lit up real quick, and it, like, just with a spotlight and just all the clearings that we were sort of sitting and watching, you know, he'd just turn it on, turn it off, turn it on, turn it off. And we were sitting just there, like, if there had been a deer in front of us or whatever like that, like, he probably would have just shot straight over the top of us and not even knowing that we were there.
Yeah. It was like that one. I was lucky enough to speak to Andrew. He's down in Vicky. I don't know if you heard about it, but he got shot up in one of the state forests up there or national parks in a public campground, just bloke illegally spotlighting, and he saw the eyelid on his swag and shot at it. End up hitting Andrew in his leg and did a heap of damage. And yeah, it took him a long time to deal with it and get right, and props to him. And he came on and shared on the previous podcast. But yeah, man, like, you just sit there and go, what the hell? Like, no deer head's worth that. Like, it just, yeah, even if you do it 10 times and get lucky, it just takes one thing that just can screw lives up, not just your own, but others. And yeah, I don't get it. Not for the sake of a deer head. Just go out. Like, you can hunt legally. Just do that. If it takes you 5 years, who cares? Like, isn't that what hunting's about? It's the challenge as well. Like, it's, you know, it's not culling. I was talking to someone about this the other day and saying that's the allure to going out and hunting. When I say I'd like to have private access, I would like a steady source of meat, and that would be amazing. But even if I had that, I wouldn't be neglecting hunting in state forests, because the challenge of that is what I actually think hunting is about. And I don't think I'd like hunting if I went out every time and I got a deer. That wouldn't be hunting. That sort of would feel more like
a deer shooting. You're just a deer shooter.
Yeah, and I don't ever want that.
Yeah, there's like I always say, there's definitely a difference between a deer shooter and a deer hunter. A deer hunter will appreciate that animal, you know, get it mounted, you know, actually take it to a taxidermist. And a deer shooter, you'll just shoot it, leave it, cut the head off, or, you know, and just walk out. Definitely a big difference.
Yeah. Look, I suppose it's, you know, people are funny, funny creatures. We all have our little ways and view things differently. And I will never understand how people can poach or do those things, but they obviously somehow justify it to themselves. And I mean, look, yeah, it's a shame, because I do think it's one of the things, I think from a hunting community, it's probably our biggest threat. I really do feel that's our biggest threat. I don't think it's animal activists. I don't think it's,
they're just taking the easy way out. That's all they want. They just want the easy ride. They don't want to do the kilometers, and they don't see the point in it. They just go, well, I can just shoot it, you know, 2 km down the road on old mate's property.
I wonder what the thrill is to do it that way and not earn it. Like, I don't know. I've always found the things I'm most proud of are the things that I've had to work the hardest for. It's not so much something that is if something's handed to me on a silver platter, it's not like I've really had to do that hard slog to earn it, if that makes sense. And I don't understand what the allure or why people would get something out of that side of it. I just don't understand that.
Yeah, well, I always look at mine that I have up on the walls and everything like that. You know, they're not a trophy to me. I look at them as a story. Like, that's just a memory on the wall. It's just a beautiful memory. Like, every deer that I have up on the wall, like, I've got 3 or 4. Oh, no, I've got maybe 5 or 6 now in the house, and I think like 4 or 5 in the shed. But a couple of them aren't mine. Like, I've got a mate's head up in the shed. But like, we just went out to cut firewood on this property, and on the way in, you know, he saw this beautiful fallow deer just standing there, and we're all got the chainsaws and the fuel out, and he just grabs the gun and takes off and says, oh, geez, you know, he's going after something. And then, you know, he comes out with that thing and a couple of trailer loads of wood and comes out with this beautiful fallow buck. And then, look, a couple of other ones that I've got in the house, you know, I've got my first Samba stag that I'll never forget that moment. You know, as soon as I see the head, it just gives me a flashbacks to the moments before pulling that trigger, or the hard yards that I'd done before that. You know, the days where, you know, you spend all day up the hill and you're just trekking along all these mountain faces and everything like that. And then you come back and he's not even a kilometre from the car. Like you've trekked all the way up into the high hills, and they're not even up there. They're on the low spots, and they I've just tracked all that for nothing. Like, but it's not for nothing. You know, it's just creating memories. That's all I look at it as.
It's experiences.
Yeah, the poachers, they'd just probably shoot it, boil the head up and just chuck it in the shed. Probably never look at it.
It's not something that ever appeals to me, and I don't understand that. And, you know, I suppose I classify myself more as a meat, you know, I hunt for meat. So not, you know, if they've got antlers as a bonus, but I have also not got into that side because I've never shot too many deer. So I can't really say if that will change when I get my first, you know, buck or stag. So it's that'll be interesting for me. I think that personal decision when I do get one on the ground, and hopefully I'm hoping it'll be this rut because it's been a long time sort of coming to chase deer and whatnot. So that could be special. And I understand why people, you know, go through taxidermy and they do all that. I get it, and I appreciate the understanding of it. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where I go because I'm not even sure myself. So, I mean, it's all part of everybody has their own journey, isn't it? So, and we all have different tastes and what we like and the like. So, yeah, it's a hard one to describe when I talk to people. And I was having a chat with a mate, shout out to Frank, because we were talking about it, and he sort of might have been changing his sort of opinion because I sort of sit there and I don't know, I've got with a young family and I'm more conscious of money, especially in this day and age. I sort of sit there and go, oh, I'd probably rather get a good scope than pay for taxidermy. But I get why people would do it, but I don't know what I'd prefer to have more. I don't know. It's sort of a tricky one. I think like I like tech and I like playing around with that sort of stuff. So it's, I suppose everyone's context is different and what they like to do and what they want to do. So that's probably the beauty of hunting, isn't it? Like we all like different things, and it would suck if we all like the same thing and chase the same animal and on the same properties or same areas. So it's just one of those beautiful things. It's what I, there's just so much difference in hunting, which I love.
Oh yeah. And like the amount of things that you can learn, it's definitely an industry that you cannot learn at all. You just cannot learn at all. You're always, you know, always learning something new. Every time you're out in the bush, you think that you've got the deer, you know, under wraps, but and then all of a sudden something else happens and you just think, oh, I've never seen one do that before. Or, you know, for instance, I've been out hunting and it's been like 40 degrees heat and it's like 10 o'clock in the afternoon on fallow, and you know, it's like once that sun comes up, like they sort of just disappear and you don't see them until the afternoon sort of thing, 10 o'clock in the morning, and you think, oh, well, day's done, it's hot. They're long gone, they're in the bush. And as we're talking about that, you know, a doe and a young'un sort of just take off in front of us and you think, oh, they're gone. Yeah, you don't even have time to get the rifle up, and you're just sitting there thinking that you sort of got these animals worked out, but you don't, and you never will. Except probably the only person that I reckon does is that Zeb's Hunting on YouTube.
Oh,
he knows exactly where them Samba deer are. He knows exactly where they are.
I think him, Errol Mason, Paul Bogues.
Yeah.
I love watching their stuff because I just think they've got it dialed right in, and it's even more impressive with people like Zeb who do it on public land and guide on public land. Like that's,
he just shows you that it can be done.
Well, it's just, you know, it's just super impressive because public land's hard, and then to guide on it, because, you know, there is an element as a guide that you've got to produce, and for him to be able to do that on public land, man, it's super impressive. I'm a big fan of their stuff altogether. So it's always good to see what they do and how they do it and try and pick up tips and tricks along the way.
Oh yeah. I love that Paul Bogue video where he's demonstrating his flex mark whistle. He's literally demonstrating on what it does, and a doe comes up behind him and honks him. Like, what better advertising is that? Like
that's
that
gold.
Just shows you that it does work. I love that video. It's great.
Yeah, it was. I only watched that a couple of weeks ago because I was sitting there.
It's a fantastic video.
Just having a play and this was like, there you go. I think he even says that. There you go. That just did happen. These things work. Yeah. Like, it was gold.
And there's another little bit of like gear. Like I'm like yourself. I'm a massive gear head. So as soon as I seen that, straight on the website, I bought it. Like I've got that much crap. I probably don't need, but like that one definitely works. That's definitely a piece of gear that works.
Yeah, I've just started to really get into the calls. So I think episode 2, we had H2K Hunting and just talking about how he makes callers, and that's an art within itself, and it's amazing. And so I've just started to get into them. So whether it be like croaking for fallow or the flex mark, and then even the tube for reds, just, you know, it's pretty funny. I do it on the way to, I have about an hour commute to work and my little ones are in the car and it's hilarious. My 18-month-old twins, I'm practicing red calls at the moment and they're doing the same in the back. It's just bloody, it cracks me up every single morning. It's just gold. So, but yeah, it's, I think that all these different things is just what excites me about it. It's probably, you know, I've played a lot of sports and quite, you know, reasonably good levels, I'd say. Had I've never been so into something compared to hunting, because there's just so much of it, whether it be tech, whether it be the different species, whether it be rifles, whether it be calls. Like, there's just so much to it. It's all fascinating to me, and I just love it all. So, yeah, it's, you know, what a time to be a hunter at the moment.
Oh, it's a fantastic time, and the amount of people that do it now, it's such a popular thing to do. And, you know, back in the day, like only a few years ago, it was pretty hard to come by a person that would actually talk to you and actually explain that they're a hunter, because people would look, it's like, oh, you hunt, like why? But now, after a few of these major events like COVID and whatever, and people are like, oh, you know, I need meat, and who else would get it for them? Like, I've given out a little bit of meat to mates and that to sort of help them get by or introduce them into venison, because I've had them say like, oh, you know, it's too gamey. I'm like, no, just, you know, write out a recipe. This is how you cook it. This is how you dress it, blah, 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 like do this and do that. And, you know, it's a fantastic time to be a hunter, to demonstrate all these things and how to do it properly. And that's why I love all these Paul Bogues and Earl Mason and Zebs and that are out there and just promoting it, showing how to do it. Like even, what's his name, Steve Ranella. He's a massive advocate for it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think what media's done, what Joe Rogan's done on the international scale, I think there's been a lot more about it. And that's where I think it's amazing, even the amount of Australian hunting podcasts we've got now. It's awesome. You know, we'd be definitely in the double figures now, which I think is great.
Yeah.
It's just showing that it is becoming more and more popular. And I think if that's happening and it's all good people doing positive messages, then that's a win for the whole community. So that's what we need.
I'm a big listener on the Becoming a Bow Hunter podcast. He's doing a phenomenal job.
Yeah, I'd agree, Matt, up there in Queensland.
Listening to his story, where he sort of began, because when he began doing it, like I was sort of probably just in front, sort of learning it, and you know, listening to his progress and his achievements, it's just been wicked. Like, and like even the people that he have on, like you'd never expect them to be on such a like a small new channel, and they're just, you know, because he's a part of that community, they're just like, yeah, like I'll help you out as much as we can. And that's what I love about the hunting community as well. Like there is a few things, like, you know, you're not going to give up your favorite fishing spot or your favorite hunting spot, but that's understandable. But shit, like if you need help with trying to find a rifle or, you know, figuring out a scope or anything like that, like people just start throwing ideas at you and like, you know, what are you into? What areas do you hunt? Like, you know, they're quick to give you advice and just to help you out. And that's probably the best part about the hunting community.
I think sometimes we get held up on the negative aspects because it is amplified. But I am a big believer in that 95% of people out there in the community are good people that are happy to help. And you're always going to have those negative comments and people that don't see eye to eye with your opinion. And that's cool. Like, that's going to happen. And, you know, if you put yourself out into the public space, you got to expect that, which is fine. And I manage the Fallow Deer Hunters of Australia Facebook page. And sometimes it gets a little frustrating. People ask a question and they'll get jumped on or stepped on. And I get frustrated in the sense that you were a beginner at some stage. You would have had these questions at some stage. Yeah, sure, they could type it into Google, but they can also put it onto a group to see what other people have done and said. Like, there's no issue. I think sometimes that jumps out. And again, there's a lot of people that help, but you don't see those ones or you don't notice those ones as much. You're seeing more the negative. And even though they might be in the minority, you still focus on them, I suppose. And I'm a big believer, if you don't agree or you don't like it, probably just scroll on. It's not that hard to do. But a lot of people 100%. Don't like to do that. But I do think social media, as I said at the start of the podcast, there's some positives and some negatives. And I do think the positives are that, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are willing to help, and it's connected a lot of people who might not have met up. I know some of the blokes I hunt with that I've met, just great guys now, they were through, yeah, social media. So that's awesome. And if we didn't have that, it probably wouldn't be there too. So you got to take the goods with the bads is what I always say. All right, Sean, mate, I've had a really good time talking to you tonight. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. Mate, that footage, whilst it's distressing, I'm really glad that you have put it out there. I know that probably couldn't have been easy, making that decision to put it out there and not knowing what comments could come back at you. So I appreciate it going out there just to spread the positive message of hunting and that we actually do care for the animals as well, mate. So thank you very much for sharing that. What I'll do is I'll get the link off your Instagram page and we'll put it up for people to go and look at as well. So if you haven't, guys, please go and check it out. Yes, it's confronting, but I think it's something that you want to watch and share and say this is definitely worse than what we do as hunters when we are chasing our quarry. So again, mate, thank you very much for coming on.
Oh, thank you very much, mate. And I just want to say that, you know, appreciate what you're doing here and spreading the word and everything like that. And it's definitely a confronting video, but just, yeah, it had to be shared and sort of shared out into the world and spread it around. And yeah, it's definitely a confronting video. It's not good to watch, but yeah, it needs to be seen, that's for sure.
Mate, it is. I hope that you never have to see something like that again, because it's not nice and I can't imagine what it would have actually been like being there. So props to you for getting the footage to be able to share it and also advocating for hunters and putting it out there. So I really respect what you did there. And mate, I'm sure we'll chat in the future, but thanks very much for coming on. Really appreciate it. Best of luck with the hunting and the photography.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. And you too, mate. Hopefully you get more time out in the bush and put some animals on the ground and put some food in the young'uns' bellies.
Fingers crossed. I know they eat a lot, so I probably need to from a financial perspective. But
and the older they get, the more they're going to eat. So oh, yeah. Time to fill some freezers, mate.
Mate, that scares me. All right, mate. Thanks again. Appreciate you coming on. And listeners, bye for now. If you have a topic, guest, question, or any gear that you want to hear about on the podcast, shoot us an email, australianhuntingandbeyond@gmail.com. Alternatively, find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All the links are in the show notes. If you haven't already, make sure you give us a review and subscribe to our podcast on whatever platform you're listening on. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.